Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on how would Jesus vote for president when we come back. You know, in Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question that says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or if it's paraphrased, it says, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now, can you imagine asking a question like that 4,000 years ago? Today, of course, it's a simple question, and we answer by passing it through the prism of the spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago in Job's day? And since it's manifestly impossible for any human mind to frame a question that the mind knows nothing of, there has to be a greater mind than Job that is the questioner here in Job 38, verse 24. But when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth rays of light. These rays of light, after passing through the prism of the spectroscope, divide themselves on a graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star out in the universe, all we have to do is pass that light ray through a spectroscope to see what the composition of the star is and the proportion of each of its ingredients. This division of light rays is always constant. It doesn't vary in the least particular, so that we can always rely upon the results. So we know that spectroscopic analysis is an exact science, and this is the manner by which the light is apportioned. And this places you and I into a quandary, because either Job knew this, or else there's a supernatural wisdom that's being revealed here in Job 38, verse 24. And that's just one more example of many, many examples of science in Scripture. And it's one more of the many lessons that we teach here in our Mosaic Law School at Isabella, Missouri. For more information, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click on the email. Send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we started off here with 100 positions or planks or issues that I said we'd discuss, or as many of them as we can get in this series of programs on how would Jesus vote for president? Or if Jesus was running for president, what would his position be on these political topics that the candidates are bandying about today? For instance, we talked about health care. How would Jesus vote for health care? What would his position be on health care insurance or Medicare or Medicaid or AIDS research or Alzheimer's disease and so on? So we've covered about, 15, 20 or so. So I haven't been keeping track exactly, but I circled off each one. Let me tell you where the score is so far. On health care insurance, Jesus would vote no. On Medicare, abolish it. Medicaid, do away with it. AIDS research, abolish it. Alzheimer's disease research, abolish it. Cancer research, abolish it. Health insurance, abolish it. Forget it. Income tax, abolish the income tax. The Federal Reserve Bank, abolish it. Paper money, abolish it and replace it with gold and silver. Clad coin, abolish it. Inflation, abolish it, which comes automatically when you get rid of your central bank and paper money. Separation of church and state. Well, we'll separate the church from the state, but we won't separate the law of God from the state. School prayer, institute it. Freedom of religion, abolish it. The Ten Commandments, implement them. Pedophiles reporting addresses, execute them. The National Christmas Tree, abolish it. Abortion, Roe v. Wade, abolish abortion. Usury and interest on the national debt, abolish the national debt. Lobbying, abolish lobbying. Campaign contributions, abolish campaign contributions. And then abolish campaigns. How about mortgage credit? Abolish it. The death penalty. Implement it for 24 crimes. Insurance regulation. Abolish it. Social Security reform. Abolish Social Security. And it'll reform itself. The death penalty. No, I already covered that one. Stocks, bonds, and securities. Abolish stocks, bonds, and securities. Credit cards. Abolish all credit cards. Banking reform. Abolish all banks. And that will give you banking reform. Congress and lawmaking. Abolish the Congress. How about organ transplants? Abolish organ transplants. How about transfusions so that we can have a clean blood supply? Abolish blood banks and transfusions. How about freedom of religion? I already covered them. Abolish freedom of religion. And then finally, how about corporate crime like Enron and Global Crossing? Abolish all corporations. Now that's Jesus' position. That's the biblical position. Can you see why the Bible is so unpopular? Can you see why the law of God, the Ten Commandments, and the Mosaic Law is hated and despised by everybody? It's a radical new governmental reform program. I mean, this thing is absolutely mind-boggling, isn't it? That's why Jesus can never run for president of the United States. See, when he comes back, he's told us about what his plan is. When he comes back, he's going to come back as a King of Kings and a Lord of Lords. He's coming back at the end of a great war, when the world is depleted of about 90% of its inhabitants, when you have total chaos, when there's death and destruction on a scale that only can be described in the Bible. It's called biblical proportions. And then he's going to come back, and he's not going to ask you for your vote. He's going to tell you, I'm here, and I'm taking over. Sit down, shut up, and do what you're told. And if you don't, he will break your legs. Now, you people over in England are going to have it a lot easier than we Americans. And that's because you've already got a king over there. You've got a queen. And you people over in England, you understand how to bow your knee to the queen or the king. We Americans, we don't know how to do that. We have never done it in the past. We were opposed to it when King George was king. And we said we will never bow our knee to a king. And we have it written right into our Constitution, there'll be no titles of nobility. I mean, we hate it. We despise it. We loathe it. We won't tolerate it. We won't put up with it. And when Jesus comes back, he says, I'm going to come back as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And he says, every knee will bow to me. And I got news for him. If he thinks that there's any Americans that are going to bow their knee to Jesus, then he's got his head up the wrong end. But I got news for you. He said, you're going to bow your knee to me. And I suspect in order to get Americans to bow their knees to Jesus, he's going to have to break a lot of knees. And I suspect that's exactly what he's going to do. So I started practicing. I'm getting like you Englishmen over there. Well, I'm practicing my knee bending. Because when he comes back, it's either that or he's going to break my legs. And so I said, well, I'm so sensitive to pain and I'm such a wimp that I better learn how to bow my knee to Jesus when he comes back, because he said I'm going to bow my knee to him. I saw it right there. It's in the book of Revelation. He said, you, Gordon, you're going to bow your knee to me. I said, okay, boss, I got you. All right, so you Englishmen over there, you got it made. You know how to do that. We Americans over here, we're going to have a real problem. There's going to be a lot of broken legs. A lot of broken legs over here. Now, I don't know. I didn't count these up over here, but I went through about, I don't know, 30, 40 policy positions, planks, as they call it, you know, political parties, that are outlined here in the Bible. The Bible is not silent about politics. The Bible is the premier, preeminent book on international geopolitics. And there's a guy in here called Jesus, a guy called God, the Creator, who is a very astute politician. Very, very astute politician. He's a dictator, you know. And he's not a Democrat. He doesn't run for office. He's not going to run for office. He's not going to ask you for your vote. He's going to set up a monarchy. He's going to be the king, and he's got a bunch of people that he calls saints, in the Bible are called saints, that he's going to resurrect from the dead. They did not go to heaven, and they're not alive today. They're all dead and buried, and they're all unconscious, awaiting the resurrection. A bunch of them are mentioned in Hebrews chapter 8, and he said, well, I'm going to resurrect a bunch of these guys. I know where some of these political offices are. For instance, King David is going to be the king over Israel, all 12 tribes. So if any of you out there had an idea that maybe you could be the king over Israel or sit on Jesus' right hand, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but you have already lost that position to a fellow who's already qualified for it. So during the thousand-year millennium, David is going to be resurrected from the dead. He's a pretty experienced guy. See, he was king over Israel for about 30-some years, you know, 33 or 34 years. He served as king. So he's already a pretty experienced guy. He's already had some personal contact with God himself, live and direct. And he's knowledgeable. He's obedient to God. He knows how to practice the Ten Commandments. He understands the laws of God. He implemented them when he was king. He qualified because he did. And he's been given that job already, past tense. He's already qualified. And I got that out of Hebrews 11, you know, and I didn't write it. I kind of thought I would like to be the king over Israel, and then I read that, and I said, darn, I've lost that position. I can't qualify for that. Well, okay, is there something else that I could do? Maybe I could be the governor of New York, or maybe the governor of California. Maybe I could succeed to a Schwarzenegger. And I looked in the same Hebrews 11, I said, oh my God, I've lost that job too. Yeah. Over the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 apostles, you know, like Peter, Paul, James, and John, you know, they've already qualified. So those jobs are gone. Those political posts have already been filled. So now I'm pretty well aware of some of the policy positions that are going to be carried out by this government when it's imposed. There isn't going to be any national health care insurance. There isn't going to be socialized medicine. So if you think that you're going to eat pig, plug up your arteries, and then have bypass surgery paid for by the taxpayers, you got your head up the wrong end. That ain't going to happen. Not under this government. In fact, I kind of doubt that you're going to have much Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage to eat. So there's that story. Now, there are some positions that are still available. You know, and I kind of hope I'd like to qualify for one of those positions. And I was watching Kent Hovind the other day, and he asked this question. He said, are you saved? And I have to say, Kent, no, I'm not. I'm not saved yet. I'm not saved past tense, and I'm not saved present tense. I have high hopes that maybe I can be saved future tense, but I'm not there yet. Now, Kent Hovind, he was saved, I think it was February 28th, 1961, as I recall, or something like that. I kind of forget exactly, but he was already saved, or 68, maybe that was what it was. He's like a lot of evangelical Christians, you know, these people are already saved past tense, and therefore they got the switch set and the track is clear and they're on their way to heaven. Unfortunately, I read the Bible. I couldn't find heaven anywhere in there, but I could find resurrection in Revelation 20. I can see a resurrection coming up. I couldn't find going to heaven in there anywhere. Well, I'm not denying that there's a heaven. In fact, there's three of them mentioned in the Bible. Three heavens. The atmosphere, that is from the ground level up to about 100,000 feet, that's heaven number one. Then from about 100,000 feet out to the third heaven, that's heaven number two, we call it interstellar space, and then heaven number three is where God's throne is. It's on the other side of as far out there as you can see. As far out there as there is between here and there. There's a boundary line out there, and then there's a third heaven. That's where the creator of the universe lives, and you can't see in there. Okay, now, I wouldn't know that if I hadn't seen it in the scripture, and so I'm just a reporter here reporting these facts to you. And then from time to time I throw in, well, you can find that over here. Look, I just told you about resurrections. All three resurrections are mentioned in Revelation 20. The word resurrection appears in the Bible 135 times, if I remember that right, 135. Resurrection is in there quite often, been around there for a long time. Going to heaven for good people and going to hell for bad people ain't in the Bible, taint there. Send me an email. Show me where it's at. I'd like to read that. Now, we're talking about presidential elections. We're talking about presidential timber. And I pointed out to you last time, Ron Paul is the only presidential candidate who's a non-communist. Now, Jesus is a non-communist. Jesus is a conservative. Jesus is so far to the right, it would make the John Birch Society look like a bunch of commie pinko fags. By comparison, I mean, that guy is a right winger if I ever heard of one. He's more like a libertarian, you know, for you libertarians out there. Jesus is more like a libertarian. See, he's kind of opposed to government in its all-pervasive course and sense of all power comes from the government and all taxes go to the government. He had a different plan. Limited government came from Moses at Mount Sinai. Limited government comes from God. This all-pervasive, I'm going to run the whole country concept, that comes from Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Central Committee. That didn't come from Jesus. All right, so let's take a look at a couple of more over here. What do you think Jesus would think about our public land policy, our national parks, the national wilderness areas, drilling on the Alaska North Slope, gun control, sex education in public school, and evolution in public school? What do you think Jesus would think of public school? I mean, education is a big subject here in the United States. And did you know, or would you believe, if I told you, that education is a big subject in the Bible? It is. There's a lot said about education in the Bible. In fact, I've got a section in here on education in the Bible. It's chapter 33, and it's entitled Education. And there's a number of scriptures in the Bible that deal with education. Who should teach sex education to your sons and daughters? Should that be a paid professional with a teaching credential who has been hired by the local school district to teach science in your public school? Is that the person who should be teaching your children sex education? Should your child be taught sex education by a pedophile or a sodomite who has a teaching credential and is teaching that science class in your public school? Should sex education be taught by your local priest or your local preacher in your local Catholic church, of which one-third of them are pedophiles or sodomites? Should they be teaching sex education in your church or your synagogue, maybe? You know, here in America, we just had a sex scandal here in the Catholic Church. And the Catholic Church admitted that up in Boston that one-third of their priests up there were pedophiles and or sodomites. I was, I'm an old construction worker. I'm a plumber. I didn't think that there was much, you know, and I use four-letter words and I'm about as crass as they come. I was absolutely shocked. I couldn't believe that you people up in Boston, you Catholic people in Boston, would tolerate one-third of your clergy being queer or child molesters. I thought that when this came out, you people would go berserk up there and kill every Catholic priest drawn breath just to make sure that you got all of the guilty ones. You didn't. You people are still going back to church. So that tells me that you ratified, you believe in, and you approve of sodomy and child molestation in the Catholic Church, or you would leave the Catholic Church, or you'd kill all of those criminals up there. And by the way, I pointed out to you that the death penalty goes to child molesters, pedophiles, and sodomites. Now, that came from God. Now, of course, we're not going to vote for Jesus. Now, don't think now for a moment that I'm trying to get you to vote for Jesus. He doesn't need your vote. He told us plainly, he says, when I come back, I don't need any votes. I'll come back and I'll take over, and anybody that gets in the way dies right there. Got that? And then when he comes back, he's going to implement a new policy concerning sex education in public schools. There isn't going to be any. And that means that you parents out there are going to have to learn sex and reproduction and be able to competently teach your child. Now I know a little bit about it. I'm not too keen, not too knowledgeable, you know, about biology and sex and reproduction and one thing and another. But my daddy sat me down about 12 years old, I guess 11, 12 years old, and he said, "Son, come over here. I'm going to explain this to you." Now, I'm on a farm here. I used to have little children here on the farm. Every little child, 5 years old, that lives on a farm knows where babies come from. And they don't come from the hospital, kids. Babies don't come from storks. Babies don't come from hospitals. But, you know, when you leave the farm and you go to the city, you city kids over there, you're told that the stork brought your little brother. And you believed it because your mommy told you that. Now, I don't know why your mother told you that the stork brought your brother. That was a lie. That wasn't true. That's not a part of reproduction. Or, little Bobby came from the hospital. We got him at the hospital. No, that's not true, boys and girls. Your brothers and sisters, your mommies and daddies did not come from storks and they did not come from hospitals. You came from between your mother's legs. That's what the Bible says. Want to know where babies come from? They come from between their mother's legs. All right. Now, I know that's shocking to most of you out there, but that's the truth, and you know it. You know, I mean, you know, if you got to be 30 years old, you probably know that by now. It's kind of like going number one and number two. Can you teach your children that defecation and urination are natural bodily processes designed by God Himself, and that they need to learn how to do that and use it correctly? Can you teach sex education to your own child? I mean, do you need some paid professional that's gone to college over here and he's probably a sex pervert to teach that to your child? Maybe using your kid, you know, for a sample. All right. Now, here in the Bible, here in the Bible, in Exodus 18, verse 20, here's some instruction about education And who's responsible for education? And boys and girls, it ain't the federal government, and it ain't the state legislature, and it ain't the public school teacher. So here's who's responsible for education. Exodus 18:20, "And you shall teach them ordinances and laws, and you shall show them the way wherein they must walk, and the work that they must do." Leviticus 10, verse 11, "And that you may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which the Lord has spoken unto them by the hand of Moses." Exodus 24:12, "And the Eternal said to Moses, You come up unto me in the mount, and be there, and I will give you tables of stone, and a law, and commandments, which I have written, that thou mayest teach them." In Leviticus 14, verses 54 through 57, he says, "This is the law for all manner of plague of leprosy and scall, and for the leprosy of a garment, and of a house, and for a raising or a rising, and for a scab, and for a bright spot, to teach when it is unclean, and to teach when it is clean. This is the law of leprosy." In Deuteronomy 4, verses 1 through 24, here's some paraphrases. "Now therefore hearken, O Israel, unto the statutes and unto the judgments which I teach you for to do them." You know, if you were going to send a kid to public school, that public school teacher should be teaching the law of God in the public school from the Bible. They used to do that in this country. Abraham Lincoln learned how to read from the Bible. In the old days, we used to teach our children how to read, and we had to have a book to teach them from, and so we taught them from the Bible. And at the same time, they were learning the law of God, which was the modality prescribed by God herein, if you want to read it. It's in Deuteronomy chapter 4, 1 through 24. Deuteronomy chapter 4 is the education chapter. Which, by the way, when sweet Jesus comes back, he's going to implement. There isn't going to be any public school. Hey, you people in New York, there isn't going to be any PS 235. They're all going to be abolished. And the children of New York are going to learn how to read and write. Believe it or not, they can learn to read and write, and they can learn how to speak English, too. I'm always amazed at black people in the United States. They can't speak English. Hell, you can't understand half of them. Don't get mad at me now and write me a letter and tell me I'm a racist. Hell, I can't understand you. What I never could figure out is how come black people in the British Empire, I mean black people in Uganda, Kenya, Jamaica, can speak perfect English, which tells me that black people aren't nearly as handicapped as I thought they were. Now, they can't speak English here in the United States, but they can speak English in the British Empire, which tells me that there's something that the British do that's different than we do here in the United States, because the black people in the British Empire can all speak English, and you can understand them. And they're not speaking with accents and split infinitives and double negatives either. I mean, those people can all talk real good. Going on here, he says, "But you that have taught the statutes and judgments, for what nation is there so great who has God so nigh unto them, as the Eternal your God is in all things that we call upon him for? And what nation is there so great that has statutes and judgments so righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? But teach them to your sons and to your sons' sons, and that they may teach their children. And the Eternal commanded me at that time to teach you statutes and judgments, that you might do them in the land where you go over to possess it." How do you like that? Then in Deuteronomy 5, verses 31 through Deuteronomy 6, verse 25, that's two chapters, Deuteronomy 5, starting in verse 31, and then carry that through Deuteronomy 6, verse 25. He says, "Which you shall teach them, that they may do them in the land which I give them to possess it. Now these are the commandments, the statutes, and the judgments which the Eternal your God commanded to teach you, that you might do them in the land where you go in to possess it, that you might fear the Eternal your God to keep all of his statutes and his commandments which I command you, you and your sons' sons, all the days of your life. And these words which I command you this day shall be in your heart. That's in your mind, not your blood pump. Blood pumps don't think. Your heart, your mind. And these words which I command you this day, that they shall be in your mind, in your brain, that you shall teach them diligently unto your children. Yeah, that's right, boys and girls. This law, all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, should be taught by you in your own home school to your own children. And you ought to stop telling them that their little baby brother came from the stork. It came from between your mother's legs, children. That's a biblical statement. Hey, it's halfway time here, and I got to remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the webpage as well. Now, The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience, and The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, The Law Hour is The Law Hour brings you timely reports on subjects such as law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the law or an editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are talking about how would Jesus vote for president, so I selected out about 100, you know, topics, you know, 100 planks, 100 issues that the presidential candidates are talking about. Like education, you know, they get real excited about education. I just want to tell you that Jesus' position on education is homeschool. And this whole concept of public school, and should we teach evolution, public school, sex education? Well, children, if you don't have public school, then we don't have the subject matter of should we teach evolution in public school. There won't be any public schools. But what we are going to teach is the Feast of Tabernacles, and at the Feast of Tabernacles, once every 7 years, you're going to learn the entire law of God. It's going to be presented to you every 7 years. Every seventh year at the Feast of Tabernacles, there is a statute that requires this law. All 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments will be presented. And you will be there. You will be at the Feast of Tabernacles if you're drawing breath. And you'll be there with your pencil sharpened and your hair combed and sitting in your seat with your hands neatly folded to be instructed in the law of God. And if you don't like it and don't want to do it, Well, there's a solution for people like you. Hitler came up with it. He called it the final solution. It's called the lake of fire. If we need a final solution, this guy, keep in mind now, you're not going to vote for this guy. And if you want to, you can develop a loyal opposition to him. And he talks about that, about Revelation 21, 22. He talks about the end of the millennium, when there's going to be a great revolution, and all you rebels can revolt against sweet Jesus and against this crazy law that you hated when you were alive the first time, and you're going to hate just as much when you're resurrected and come up in the general resurrection or the great white throne judgment. And then there is a final solution. That final solution is called the lake of fire. And here's your creator. He says, now if you can't learn and you don't like the program, it's fine. There's no problem with that. We'll just terminate you. Terminate you. And he's not going to throw you into hellfire for all the rest of eternity, so he can torture you, and he can sit up here and rub his hands with glee and say, ha ha, I told you. No, he's not a sadist. What he's going to do is he's going to terminate you. He's going to put you back in the same position you were in 1,000 years ago. It's called non-existence. And in the Bible, it's called death. D-E-D. Dead. All right. And you need to learn that. Somebody needs to tell you. Somebody needs to explain it to you. If you can't learn it now, it's no big deal. No big problem. Sit back and relax. It may not be your time. May not be your turn. You'll learn it a little later on. But well, you're going to learn. Somebody's going to explain it to you. I'm just here a little early in the process or program as a reporter telling you, hey, listen, did you know this? Does anybody ever tell you these things? Did your preacher ever explain that? No, he was too busy. He was too busy over here having sex with your 7-year-old son, the sodomite priest, you know, up in Boston. He was having sex with your 7-year-old son. No, he wasn't teaching your son about where babies come from. He wasn't teaching your son about the law of God and incest and what happens to pedophiles and sodomites. He was one of them. I want to point out to you that which God thought to do to the sodomites and the pedophiles, because you wouldn't carry it out, he's going to do it to you. Just thought I'd throw that one out there for you. Now, we get instruction, and then we don't carry it out, and then we have to pay the penalty. That's what's happened to all you people out there with cancer. Somebody, somewhere along the line, failed to instruct you in health and health care. And because of that, you got cancer. And it may kill you. That's the bad news. Now, the good news is you're coming up in a resurrection. And then God's going to say, hey, you. Hey, dummy. Did you learn anything from that cancer? Because if you didn't, you have to be brain dead. Cancer is a god-awful hard way to die. And I've watched a few people die from cancer, and I looked at that and I said, if there's any way that I can avoid dying from cancer, I'm going to do it. And I found a way to do that. I found out how to die free of cancer. And so I'm working diligently. I'm going to die one of these days. I ain't getting out of here alive. But I'm going to see if I can die without dying from cancer. Now, let's take a look at public land policy and national parks and national wilderness areas and so on, drilling on the Alaska North Slope. We got a very simple instruction from our Creator. He told Adam and Eve to dress and keep the garden. There isn't much more you can add to that. You know, we were instructed to dress and keep the garden. Now, when you develop or when you build an industrial facility and you produce a bunch of toxic chemicals and then you discharge those toxic chemicals into a moving body of water and then you go downstream from your factory and you observe dead fish, okay, that's the symptom that tells you that you are not dressing and keeping the garden. You see how simple that is? I mean, you know, you don't have to go to college and study environmental protection for crying out loud. Have you got eyes? Do they see anything? I mean, hell, if you're blind, maybe we do need the Environmental Protection Agency. But you know, when you're out here in West Virginia and you're blowing the tops off of mountains and you're getting the coal out of there and you're destroying all the vegetation that's in there and you're plugging up the creeks and the streams over there, that's called pollution. Hey kids, is that dressing and keeping the garden? I don't need an Environmental Protection Agency. I don't need a president. I don't need somebody to explain to me what the hell is going on. I can see it. Now a question arises, well, what are we going to do about it? Now, the governments are instituted among men to protect us from other men. And so, you know, there are men out there that are polluting the environment, and they need to be dealt with. And there's a solution to people that pollute the environment. You know, you make them pay for it. And so you say, okay, well, now, you know, if you want to have a government, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and John McCain and, you know, and Ron Paul and so on. If you're running for president, then you need to have your policy statement. You know, well, where do you stand on the environment? And Jesus has a stand on the environment. It's very simple and very straightforward. Dress and keep the garden. So when King Jesus comes back and sets up the government, he's going to institute just weights and balances and gold and silver money. And private property. Thou shalt not steal. And if you want to build a factory and you want to manufacture goods and sell them in the marketplace, you're going to have all the opportunity that you want to. If you want to drill a hole in the ground and extract oil and then make gasoline and sell it to people so they can burn it in their cars, there's no problem with that. Now, if in the process of making your gasoline, you're discharging toxic chemicals out in the river and killing fish, I'm sure that some nice man from the government who wants to help you is going to come and point out the dead fish and say, sir, fix this. Fix it. And if you think you're going to go to Washington or go to Jerusalem and lobby somebody and say, we want investment tax credits, I think somebody's going to tell you to stick it up or that you got your head up or something on that order. And I think you're going to be told the second time, fix it. And if somebody has to come out there and tell you the third time that you're killing fish and you need to fix it, the third time is going to be the champ, partner, because you're going to go out of business real fast. Now, this thing of drilling up here in the Arctic, you know, God tells us in Genesis 1, 2, and 3. He says, I have given you the gold and the silver in the ground. I have given you these raw materials, the oil, the gold, the silver, the iron, and so on. Now, go out there and dig it out of the ground. And dress and keep the garden in the process. That's a very simple law. Doesn't take a real genius to figure it out. When you're out here blasting the tops off the mountains of West Virginia, by God, boys, you better restore it just like it was when you got there. Now, if you think you want to take 12, 15, 20, 30, 50,000 acres... and to turn it into a moonscape, well, okay. But when you get through getting the coal out and you get done over here, that thing better be put back like it was when you started. Or maybe you better not destroy it to start with, because there's going to be hell to pay. And if you're killing the fish in the river, now you environmentalists over here, a bunch of environmental wackos, you know, I got to agree with Rush Limbaugh. You people have your heads up the wrong end. And for people, you know, they can't come to a happy medium or a balance. I mean, the concept of going out here and drilling a hole in the ground and extracting the oil without destroying the environment has not entered the mind of an environmentalist. They don't believe that can be done. I'm here to tell you it can be. And to the industrialists, I think from their point of view, they don't believe you can drill a hole in the ground and extract the oil without causing environmental damage. I got news for them, that can be done too. We can do it. We can do both. We can do them at the same time. Boys and girls, we can all learn how to walk, talk, and chew gum and do it all at the same time. Now, there's oil up there on that north slope, and we need that oil, and we ought to go up there and get it. And when we go up there to get it, we ought to restore the land to the same condition that it is when we got there, or something real close to it. You know what I mean? Now, we don't do that. And I hear you environmentalists out there, yeah, but they don't do that. And that's because your government's ineffective. It doesn't work. As evidenced by the fact that you've got acid rain in the east, you're burning a lot of coal, and you're raising a lot of hell, and you're creating a lot of problems that ought not to be created by simply following this simple, simple standard, dress and keep the garden. And so it tells me that democratic government doesn't work. And your autocratic government in China doesn't work. If you want to take a real hard look at mankind, your governments don't work. And that's all the message in the Bible was from the Garden of Eden. You people cannot rule yourselves. That's a very bitter pill to swallow. See, here in America, we believe in democracy. It's part and parcel of our religion. We believe we can rule ourselves. I'm just here as an observer to tell you, well, t'ain't happened yet. T'ain't happening now. What makes you think it's going to happen with Hillary as president? Now, you're going to go out here and you're going to vote for one of these people, and you're going to install him as president, and you're going to get a lot more of the same. Barack Obama is not going to stop lobbying in Washington. Barack Obama is not going to stop anything that's going on, including pollution. And it doesn't make any difference whether you drill oil wells up on the North Slope or not. You're running out of oil. You've already reached peak oil. Whether it's physical or political is irrelevant. I get letters in here and some guy says, oh, Gordon, you dummy, don't you know there's lots of oil in the Earth's crust? Oh, yes, smarty. I know there's lots of oil in the Earth's crust. But you've already reached peak oil. And Enron and Shell Oil have seen to that. So what the hell difference does it make if it's political or physical? You've either got it or you don't, and you don't got it, so therefore you got higher oil prices. And that's what the oil companies want, and that's what government wants, and that's what you're going to get. $6 a gallon gas in the United States coming to a station near you shortly. And as soon as you get through this 2008 election campaign, you're going to have a $1 a gallon gas tax put on gasoline as an environmental tax. That'll take gas up to $4.50 to $5. And then Ben Bernanke, you know, that's Helicopter Ben, he promises us that we're going to get all of the liquidity that we deserve. And that's going to take you to $6 gas by about 2010. Which is no big deal, because they've already got $6 gas over in England and Holland. So, you know, it's coming to a station near you, but you don't get used to the idea, because that's what's going to happen. And this idea that you're going to commute 200 miles one way to work, you know, every day is coming to an end. Like it or not. And it's not that way because I said so. I'm just a reporter. I'm just looking at trends. I'm just looking at what your politicians are telling you. And I'm not sure that you people actually listen to these politicians when they tell you what they're going to do. I don't think that you really, honest to God, believe that these crazy lunatics running for president are actually going to put into practice the insane policies that they're telling you they're going to give you. Now, we've been through this before. You know, socialized medicine, national health care insurance isn't something brand new, children. It's been around for a long time. Hyperinflation isn't something brand new. We've seen hyperinflation work in the past. And boys and girls, if you people in America, honest to God, if you believe hyperinflation, the Federal Reserve, and Ben Bernanke and Hillary Clinton are the solution to your economic and your economy problems, you got your head up the wrong end again. We've already done it. We've been there, done that, didn't work, and you're going to do it again, bigger and better next time. Oh, God, let me off. Let me off this ride, please. And then you guys go on without me. That's why I told you kids out there, you know, I got off this ride back in 1978. I'll tell you a little story about Social Security. Jesus doesn't care much for Social Security. just to tell you plainly. He believes in strict liability, not limited liability, and he's going to re-implement strict liability under the statute in Exodus 21, 28 through 36. Social Security is going to be a relic of the past. You can make it a relic of the past by resigning from Social Security, but you want to have some legal training before you do that, because you can only resign from Social Security one time. And if you screw it up, you're going to die in the Social Security system. You got one narrow window to escape from Social Security. There is still an escape clause from the mark of the beast. Now, if you screw that up, I'll just tell you, then you're going to have the mark of the beast and you're going to die with it. Remember, God told you very plainly, he says, if you've got the mark of the beast, you're going to die with it. So I'm going to get you. And then, of course, your government tells you if you don't have the mark of the beast, you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade, and you're going to starve with it or without it. All right, now I just told you about sex education and evolution in the public schools. I told you about drilling on the Alaska North Slope, national wilderness areas, national parks. Oh, national parks. You're not going to have any national parks. You're not going to have any national wilderness area. It ain't going to happen. You're going to dress and keep the garden, all of it. Everywhere in downtown Brooklyn and in the Sawtooth Range and in Yosemite and in Yellowstone, you are not going to build a chemical plant at the Great Geyser in Yellowstone and pollute it. I mean, that isn't going to happen. So you environmentalists can sit back and relax. You know, the pollution's coming under control. Global warming is going to be brought under control. But Al Gore isn't going to do it. And Hillary and Barack, they're not going to solve that problem. I mean, come on, kids, let's grow up and get real. You know, they're talking about this carbon dioxide and power plants polluting the air. Let me tell you something here. Get your pencil out. Sharpen both ends of it, would you? Let me give you a number here. There was a volcano over in the Philippines about 1992, 3, 4, something like that. It's called Mount Pinatubo, if I've pronounced that right. You know, you Filipinos probably get mad at me now. But, you know, for you Anglos over here, Mount Pinatubo. Can you say that? Pinatubo? It's a volcano. And it erupted. And it was a big eruption. All right. That volcano emitted some carbon dioxide gas. Do you know how much carbon dioxide gas came out of that volcano in the year or two that it was erupting? Okay. Now you got your pencil out here? Let's write this down. Mount Pinatubo emitted, that is, it spewed forth more carbon dioxide than has been spewed forth or put into our atmosphere by all of the activities of mankind from the Garden of Eden to last night at 5 o'clock. Now, did you hear me? Did you hear that? Mount Pinatubo put more carbon dioxide in the air in 2 years of eruptions than all of the activities of mankind combined for all of his existence on planet Earth. Boys and girls, there is a thing called global warming, but it doesn't have anything to do with burning coal or driving your car up and down the highway. Now, you're going to have a carbon tax of $1 a gallon put on your gasoline gas pump in order to combat global warming. But this horse pucky about global warming is to get you to accept the $1 a gallon tax. It doesn't have anything to do with reality. It has to do with Alice in Wonderland. Now, I'm not going to change anything, and neither is Ron Paul, and your vote next November isn't going to change anything either. I'm going to pay that $1 a gallon gas tax just like you are. But let's prepare to earn the $1 a gallon to pay it, because that's where it's coming. That's what it's coming to. And I don't care who's elected president. You can elect John McCain. You can elect Mike Huckabee. You can elect Hillary. You can elect Barack. You can elect Ron Paul. And you're going to get the $1 a gallon carbon tax, whether you like it or not. And I don't care who you elect, you're going to get socialized medicine. Well, they're not going to call it socialized medicine. They're going to call it national health care insurance. And I have no idea what that's going to cost. They haven't told us that yet. Nobody is telling you, well, okay, here's what this is going to cost. But let me tell you, you know that $13,000 a year that you're paying for your health care now? It's going to be more than that. And you poor people out there, and you're sitting there saying, well, they're going to tax the rich. They're not going to tax me. Let me tell you something here, boys and girls. Wake up and smell the coffee, all you poor folk out there. All you old folks on Social Security. If you think the rich are going to pay for your national health care insurance, you got your head in the wrong place again. Because the rich don't pay taxes. The poor do, and you're going to pay it in higher prices. You're going to pay it with higher gas taxes. You're going to pay it with higher food bills. But you're going to pay it, every damn dime of it. And if you think Henry Kissinger's going to be paying it, again, boys and girls, you are not paying attention. You know, I give you books and I send you to school and you eat the covers, then you're not paying attention and you're not learning. Now, sir, we have not been able to govern ourselves yet, and there's not very much likelihood that we're going to in the near future or distant future. Now, there's a government coming. I don't know just when. I'm not a prophet. Jesus doesn't talk to me. I think that if he did, I'd probably have to go to the bathroom real fast and clean myself up. So I'm kind of glad that he doesn't talk to me, I guess, in a way. But there are some people out there I guess Jesus is talking to. They kind of scare me, like President Bush. When you tell me that Jesus or God is talking to you, that's time to get scared. I'll tell you that. I'm about out of time again, kids. I'm going to have to leave it right there. We're talking about Jesus. How would he vote for president? We'll deal with that again next time here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. But meanwhile, you're listening or have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. We are open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.